Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Lucinda Bakken-White, and we will be talking about her new book, Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wilderness in a Civilized World. Lucinda White is a happy-go-lucky nature child raised by a young single mother in the 1960s. In a dramatic turn of events, her wild nature is broken. She is shaped into a yuppie and becomes a wife of a prominent Silicon Valley CEO and a glamorous socialite. Successful by all accounts of external measure, she feels trapped by the shallow values of a dominant culture and ever more alienated from her true nature. Something primal awakens in Lucinda when she unearths and touches an ancient buffalo bone, and the experience impels her to secretly collect dead animal parts and learn the art of curing their decomposing flesh. As Lucinda challenges convention, her curiosity about the animal kingdom leads to wild and unlikely adventures, rescuing roadkill, trekking wolves, and encountering lions face to face. Confessions of a Bone Woman is one woman's story of how she recognizes and learns to express her authentically wild nature in order to heal bone by bone and become her full self, redefining what it means to be a modern woman. For more information, you can visit her website, which is AuthenticWilderness.com, and I do have a direct link to Lucinda's website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Lucinda to the show. Good day. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to have a meaningful conversation with you.
It is my pleasure. And I had to read that full introduction because there are so many things that will intrigue the listeners as well as myself. So I'm really looking forward to uncovering those. But now, your book, Confessions of a Bone Woman, introduces the idea, the concept of, a bone woman. And I have to admit, when I first received the information about this book, I was confused. I had no idea what it was about. So would you mind sharing with the listeners just exactly what a bone woman is?
What is a bone woman? Well, a bone woman, it's symbolic. There's two parts to it, really. One is it's about connecting with your passion, who you are uniquely on the inside, and just doing something because you love it so much, you're compelled to do it, and you're not thinking about, am I going to make money at this? And you're not worried about what other people think. You just do it. And in that comes an enlivening force because you're connecting with something you're passionate about. But bones are symbolic of the soul, the part of us that's eternal and never dies. So the two go hand in hand. We are spiritual beings having a human experience on the earth plane, and at the end of this lifetime, our body will decompose when we die, but the bones will remain. And so they represent our soul, mm-hmm. that part of us that never dies. So when I went on hikes and was collecting animal bones, I thought they were beautiful, and it connected me to wild animals, and then I would make art out of them. And I realized later, after reading a myth by Clarissa Pinkola Estes called La Loba, about a woman who collects wolf bones by the river. And she doesn't stop until she has every single bone. And there's like 300 pieces of bone inside a wolf. And when she finally finds the last little bone and she lays them all out on the table in the shape of a wolf, she is compelled to sing over the bones. And when she sings over the bones, mm-hmm. the wolf begins to flesh out and fur out, and then it runs off into the wilderness. And when it leaps over the river by the glint of a moonlight, it turns into a wild woman with long red, brown, and blonde hair. So it was symbolic of me reclaiming those parts of myself that had been suppressed, shamed, and denied by society and cultural conditioning.
Wow, I love that story. So now, the idea, I mean, first of all, you know, in the collecting of the bones, was this something that you did while living that Silicon Valley life, or was that something that was post that period?
I did start collecting bones when I was in the midst of my high society Silicon Valley life, and that's what helped me reclaim who I was on the inside, because I had been put through the system of being a yuppie and then being in that high society of lifestyle, which it's not that it's bad. It was just out of balance. And when I was tired and exhausted and realized there must be more to life than this, I had an encounter at an archaeological site where buffalo remains had been there for thousands of years, and it was on private property. And for some reason, I was just called to dig for a bone. And when I finally unearthed the bone, there was something electric that went through my body, and it awakened something primal in me. And it was from that point on that I kept noticing animal bones when I was at home on hikes, and I just was collecting them without knowing what I was doing. But I did keep it a secret because I knew that people in my arena would think it was weird. So I just did it in my own time. And then I looked back 15 years later, and it ended up, I started putting the bones into a barn. And then one day I looked up, and it was like a cathedral. It was so beautiful, like a natural history museum. And the energy in there was love, really, because I had so much love when I was doing it, but I didn't even know that I was doing it.
Wow, that's cool. You know, and I can see, you know, where, you know, keeping it secret, you know, from that particular circle was probably smart, you know, in a way, to, you know, because it, one of the things that I think we sometimes, you know, in this quote civilized world get wrapped up in is, you know, what will the peer, our peer group think if we, you know, show interest or a passion in something that is outside the mainstream. And, you know, so it's one of those things where, I mean, I'm sure there are people right now out there in corporate world who have their little balancing practice, you know, that they're keeping secret, you know, from their peers. But it does seem that, you know, in today's world, we need to have some kind of balance. And you know, the subtitle of your book was Realizing Authentic Wilderness in the Civilized World. So can you share a little bit of, you know, the idea of authentic wildness, you know, and, you know, how maybe, you know, within this world we can demonstrate or, you know, practice that wildness.
Yeah, wildness is a big, wild is a buzzword right now. And I look, well, first, I believe that all is good until it's out of balance. And you can be out of balance in many ways. But our overarching society has placed a high emphasis on the tangible things and fitting into a mold and following someone else's path for success and happiness. And it sort of puts you in a box. And the older we get and the more we have all these facades and fronts that we put in and things that we do just to please other people or to fit in, it becomes really a heavy burden, and we become exhausted keeping up with it. And so you know that you're disconnected from your authentic wildness, which is, again, that soul, the bones, your inner authentic self. The way you know if you're not connected to your inner authentic self is if you're exhausted and depleted. Because when you're doing something that you love, that's authentic to you, that's your passion, it comes from the inside out, and it's an enlivening energy. And you're busy, but you're enlivened, and you can't wait to get up. So bringing that back into balance when you're completely exhausted or anxious or depressed, it is usually an indication that you're overlooking something on the inside that's invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I call that wildness because the soul wants to move. It's like a child. It's that part of ourself. When you think back to when you were a child, what did you love to do? Children are so pure because they've just come from the other side, and they have that. They're playful. They're spontaneous. And they have fun, and they're super, super curious. And they're not thinking, am I going to make money at this? And then we go through the system, and it actually is really important. We need to understand the rules of society and how to have a job and take care of survival, food, shelter, and clothing. But then we tend to overemphasize that and keep going with bigger houses, more money, more cars, or we feel bad if we don't achieve that. And then we get stuck on that wheel, which puts us out of balance. And so what I often guide my clients to do, and the message in my book, is to reclaim that inner authentic self, because it's wild. That's the authentic wildness. Who are you on the inside? And it wants to move, and it wants to be curious, and it wants to be spontaneous. It wants to be childlike and playful.
Yeah, you know, and you know, when I think of the wildness, to me, I mean, in addition to all of those scriptures that you just used, to me, it's just unstructured. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where you let your inner guidance be, you know, what directs you to do or be or say or whatever. But I mean, it's that unscripted self that just is free expression, I guess, would be a way that I think of wildness.
Yes, that is it exactly. And I make the comparison out in nature because we have the nature inside of ourselves and it's reflected in the nature outside of ourselves and vice versa. Think of like the wilderness where trees and plants grow in random wild ways versus a very manicured, controlled garden. It's like the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've lived in California and New Mexico, but particularly in California, you know, every tree was planted. The idea of wilderness just, you know, is hard to come by. Even in some of the parks, you know, everything was planted and sculptured. I now live in South Carolina, and there is wilderness everywhere, and it has such a different feel to it. I mean, it's kind of like nature was allowed to express herself versus us trying to force nature's expression.
That's it exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So now, one of the things in your book, or you talk about, is the idea that the world, you feel that the world is suffering from kind of a spiritual crisis. Can you talk about, I mean, and I agree with you with that, but from your perspective, why do you feel that way, and how does that expression, that crisis look to you?
Well, I do believe in reincarnation, and so that soul that I talked about earlier that's eternal and never dies is that invisible essence inside of us. It's authentic, and it has a direct line to the Creator, to Spirit, to God, whatever you want to call it. And the spiritual crisis is this out-of-balance, overarching emphasis that our society and our culture and our families place on achieving and accomplishing everything that's tangible and manifesting and exerting energy. And again, that's good, but it's come at the sacrifice of, we don't believe it unless we see it. You have to prove it. If you're dealing with your inner self or things that are invisible, or if you believe in dreams or you're talking to spirit guides, that's nonsense. That's a waste of time. It's not going to make you money. And so that's the crisis, because we're out of balance and not connected to the spiritual aspects of life.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's funny, you mentioned the reincarnation. Probably about 4 days ago, I was visiting a friend, and she's in her 80s, and somehow we got on the topic of reincarnation, and she turned to me and said, "Nah, Robert, do you really believe in that?" She goes to the local Baptist church down the street, where a lot of the neighbors do as well. And I just said, "Yes, I did. I said, yes, I do." And I kind of explained my perspective of that. And we went through, and you know, I talked about God and us being kind of a part of that, a spark, and, you know, Christians will see Christ and Mary, and Buddhists will see Buddha, you know, whomever will see whomever when they cross, so that they can make the transition easy. She just, and because she was talking about being fearful of death, you know, and so, you know, that, I think that's kind of what led into the idea of reincarnation and her fear of, quote, the unknown. And so I got through all of that, kind of given my perspective, and she turns to me and she says, you know what, you ought to be a preacher. and I just looked at her and I said, Jean, that's the meanest thing you've ever said to me. So, but, you know, but it's interesting because, you know, the idea, you know, of reincarnation, of our connection with nature, you know, I mean, all of those beliefs really, if we don't hold any of those beliefs, I mean, it seems that those are, to me, they seem to be like, you know, I don't know, they seem to be like a basic connection to source, you know, and that if we don't at least have, you know, one or two of those beliefs, or that we disconnect, and then we become, I mean, it becomes harder, you know, to get that, you know, wildness within us to express itself.
Yeah, and I love it when people are open and want to have a conversation about reincarnation, just explore the possibilities. And I can't prove it, and I definitely don't want to convince anyone or mm-hmm. say that mm-hmm. I'm right. But I do believe in the power of thoughts and feelings and emotions. And for me, it makes me feel better. So if I feel better, I'm a better person. And it makes sense out of life, because that's the other thing that I notice, is that we have this fear of death and growing old in our culture, and the two go hand in hand. So we don't think about it, and we do everything we can to avoid growing older and avoid dying. We'd rather have a long life, perhaps that's of a lower quality, because there's not a lot of conversation around death and what happens. So then we get to that point, and it's fearful because we don't understand it. So thinking about reincarnation got me thinking about death, and then, of course, working with animal bones took me to the animals who had crossed and died. And so I put a lot of thought into death and growing old, and what came of it from me was a feeling that there's a deeper meaning in life and a purpose for why I'm here, and that there's something that happens after I die, so that I'm not afraid of anything. And so having those positive feelings and emotions, whatever you believe in, it doesn't matter what you believe in, as long as you feel good.
Yes. Yeah, that was, you know, and to me, that's the one thing, you know, when it comes time for me to, when I look at other people who have beliefs different from mine, you know, particularly religious, and if it's in the dogmatic sense, you know, I just, for me, you know, if it makes them feel at peace, you know, and comforted, then I see absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, I think that's perfect for them. I mean, it's kind of like the perfect condition for them to live their best life now, you know, and you know, we just, I mean, and I wasn't really trying to convince her. I mean, maybe that's why she said I came across like that and said I should be a preacher. But it was just, I was, you know, just expressing my view. I told her from my view of the people that I've spoken with, and you know, these are the things that I think. And I left her one of my books about spirituality, the one I wrote about Spirituality Bites, and it's like, you know, I have a feeling that she was going to kind of jump into that and kind of see why it is, how it is that I came to my beliefs, because, you know, this is one of those things that she was struggling with, you know, that, you know, she's been in ill health, and so I think, you know, that end of life thought process is in the forefront of her mind, and you know, and it's, to me, you know, if someone gets to that point and they're fearful of, you know, especially of, you know, of the unknown, that kind of thing, it's it's sad to have that fear, because I mean, it's, you know, to me, you know, it should be a peaceful, you know, transition. And that's what I told her. I said, you know, to me, it's just like end of one chapter, beginning of another, you know, it's, that's just the way that I'm going to look at it. And so anyway, but I, you know, and I agree that, you know, when it comes to, you know, as far as a spiritual crisis, you know, that we're, you know, and in today's world, when we have religious confrontation, you know, are people trying to impress their beliefs on others? You know, this is one of those things where I think that, you know, we run into a lot of problems and it creates a lot of discord. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't know what the solution, you know, to that would be. And do you have any ideas of how people may be able to kind of navigate this crisis, or if they're feeling that particular spiritual crisis, how they may, what some actions that they can take to minimize that, or kind of, you know, not be so in crisis mode?
Yes. The story that you told about your friend and reincarnation is actually really brilliant, and there's so much in there that we could use to talk about. First of all, what I love about that story is she was open to hearing you,
mm-hmm.
and so you were speaking to her, and it helped her. And that's really what would really help heal the planet, because when we connect with the spiritual essence, it's connected to source. So by definition, if you can connect to the spiritual essence in another person, forget who they look like on the outside and what their beliefs are. If you can get behind it and connect to their spiritual, their soul, you're automatically connected to the network and the web that's connected to source. It's highly connective. So you guys found common ground. You and this woman found common ground and a connection by being open to what the other person is saying. Doesn't mean you have to believe it all or agree with it. And so if we mm-hmm. could be like that with religious intolerance, recognize that diversity is so important. Broccoli is super healthy, but if all I ate was broccoli, I would die. So it's the same thing with religion and people's personalities and their beliefs. We need everybody's opinion and way of being in the world. And so to be open to the other person instead of judging it and then trying to control them to think, act, and behave like you is going to, like you said, minimize the discord. So instead of focusing on what's different and trying to control something outside of yourself to be like you, to prove that you're right, then try going inward to just feel good about what you believe in, be open to other people and grateful for that diversity. And if you talk to them and it doesn't resonate, then go somewhere else. And if you can pull one thread mm-hmm. while you're open of seeing common ground with that person, then there's a connection there. And that's going to raise the vibration on the planet and create connection and bring us closer. So the spiritual crisis kind of means that we're seeking outside of ourselves what's missing on the inside. So we're trying to convince people to think, act, and behave like us. We're trying to control other people. And it's a law. It's a spiritual law that you cannot control anything but your own self. So if we would go, and then we're blaming, right? We're angry about politics. We're angry about our husband. We're angry about that. Instead, if we would go inward and connect with who we are on the inside and then change our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors based on what we don't like, because we have that power to do it, then we're going to vibrate at a higher frequency and attract new people, places, and opportunities through law of attraction. And that's what it means to be the change you want to see, and that's what it means to connect to spirit. And it's just highly connective, and it's a higher vibration. And we just need more of that to bring the world back into balance. And there's so many ways to do it, again, based on what you resonate with. So I find a lot of healing in nature with mm-hmm. all of my senses open. So instead of talking to a girlfriend, or instead of wearing earbuds and listening to music, or instead of saying, okay, I want to run this mile in 6 minutes and I'm going to time myself, or I only have 10 minutes, I'm completely open and I'm just wandering. I'm smelling, I'm looking, I'm I'm breathing, I'm touching if I can, and I'm just wandering with no agenda. And it's amazing the magic that can happen, things that come through our sensory channels when we're in nature. We start connecting, again, that connection with this invisible essence, which is healing, which connects us to our inner authentic self and the nature inside of us. We get thoughts that are inspiring. We feel lighter. We have gratitude for the beauty around us and wonder for, you know, maybe a hawk flies right in front of our face. Things start happening. And then they're like little lighted paths on a trail. You just follow things one by one and find yourself coming closer and closer to who you are on the inside and that invisible essence. You can journal. You can get in touch with your body and how you feel by doing somatic work like dancing. You can do a dream journal. There's so many tips and techniques for slowing down, opening up with all your senses, receiving, and being that just childlike self, daydreaming, playing, wearing a funky outfit that you never thought you'd wear. The soul does not like routine. Uh-huh. So when we find ourselves in the drudgery of routine, the soul gets bored. It's wild. Remember, it wants to move. So anything we can do that's different, and it can be so silly as wearing a pair of shoes that you never thought you'd wear, or wearing two different shoes, or skipping. The soul's like, yeah, I like that. And then it wakes the soul up, and then things start happening. So you just got to start and then follow the trail.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, gosh, we're halfway through the show already, Lucinda, so I'm going to take just a quick break. And I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in. And then when we come back, Lucinda, I understand that you have had some truly wild adventures, like tracking wolves and eye-to-eye lions. So I would love to hear a little bit about that when we come back, okay?
Okay.
Great, thanks. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Hello. This is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my very special guest is Lucinda Bakken-White, and we're talking about her new book, Confessions of a Bone Woman, Realizing Authentic Wildness in a Civilized World. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is AuthenticWilderness.com. And again, there is a direct link in the show page description to her website. So with that, we're back, Lucinda.
Hello, thank you.
Hello, yeah, my pleasure. And also, I do want to let listeners know, too, if they go to your website, they can also connect with you on Facebook and Twitter. So that would be a great way to keep in touch. So, and I've liked your Facebook page, so I'm going to keep in touch with you there, and I will do Twitter afterwards, after the show. Wild adventures, huh? Tell us a little bit, particularly about the tracking of the wolves in the safari. I mean, to me,
that's
adventurous.
Wild Adventures, yes. That was very adventurous of me because I was a CEO wife in Silicon Valley, raising children and visible, highly visible. And so to do something unconventional off the beaten path put me at risk of being judged or ostracized. And yet there was something inside me that was compelled, and it kept building and building because I reached that point in my life a couple times over where I had achieved the American dream. And I was happy, and it's not to say that's a bad thing. It's to say that there's more than that. So when I achieved the American dream and then was just completely exhausted and depleted and sometimes even depressed from just pleasing people and doing work and routines and over manifesting, and then I started to have the spiritual awakening when I touched the buffalo bone, and I started collecting bones and started just connecting with the passion inside of me and doing things without even knowing why, but it made me feel good. And it built because my curiosity would lead me to a book on taxidermy or a book on, I'd find a bone and try to figure out what kind of bone is it, and it was a book on biology. And all these things were enlivening, and I was excited, and I was curious. But I was doing it all at night after the kids went to bed. And then I just recognized when my daughter went to college freshman year that I wanted to do something different. And I ran into somebody, it was one of those synchronistic events, and I was paying attention. And we had this enlivening conversation, and I just decided to go wolf tracking because I had always loved wolves. And when she mentioned it, I said, let's go. And we just went. It was the first time I'd ever left my family in 20 some odd years. And I was so scared. But I did. And I had a buddy, and we went, and we went into the woods, and we were with a group of people, and we were tracking for the wolves. And it was very hard to see a wolf because they're shy and elusive and fearful of humans. But I was in a subgroup that actually found the kill site. So it would be the best thing you could do besides see a live wolf is either to come across a den or a kill site, because then you're up close and personal with the behavior of an animal. So we tracked in the snow footprints of a wolf that was on a wild chase, chasing a deer, and then brought it down. And it was quite a process to understand how to open all my senses and track this animal and try to imagine what it was doing before we got there. And then, like a treasure hunt, to discover the kill site, which again speaks to death. And at the same time, when you saw all the tracks of the tiny creatures going in and out, you saw how many animals were fed and nourished off of this wolf taking the deer down. And the wolf was sustained, and the martens and the fishers and the ravens were sustained off of this deer that gave its life to these other animals. And so you start thinking about the wheel of life and life, death, and rebirth, and then the tracking, my innermost authentic wildness, because the soul speaks in symbols. So it's all speaking to me symbolically and awaking up my soul, because the soul is what's wild, and the soul speaks in symbols. And so it's all happening, and I may not even be consciously aware of it. So it was one of those most enlivening, fulfilling experiences I ever had. And right after that, I had an opportunity to go to Africa with a very small group. And that I didn't have a buddy with, and I had never met these people. And I said, I'm going. And I traveled to Botswana, and we were dropped off in the Kalahari Desert, just eight of us. Five students and three teachers, and we were able to meet with and shadow the San Bushman tribe and connect with their way of being in nature, to the animals and the plants. And that, again, brought me back to my roots and a deeper connection to nature and my soul and authentic wildness. So I just kept going on these adventures and getting stronger and bolder.
Wow. That's, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun, you know, but it'd be very adrenaline creating experiences. But you know, you mentioned symbols, you know, that, you know, it's life speaks to us in symbols. What is your view of animal symbols and how animals come into our lives or cross paths with animals, and you know, just the symbology of our interaction with animals?
Yeah, the symbols of animals are one of my primary modalities and connections to the spiritual realm. They brought me a lot of healing. Nature brought me a lot of healing. So through the animal bones and animals and connecting to the ancient buffaloes and the primitive cultures and their connection and reverence for nature and the animals that they killed, because the buffalo kill site where I found the bone was actually from a Native mm-hmm. American culture, when they used to revere mm-hmm. the animal and use every part of it when it died and fed their right. community and their shelter and their clothing. So I became interested in indigenous cultures and their connection to nature, which is why I went to Africa, which is why I went wolf tracking. And our ancestors, before there were podcasts and self-help books and psychologists, they looked to animals as their guides and their teachers. And in a lot of these cultures, people had an animal totem, which represented their authentic nature. And the authentic nature was cultivated in the clan from a very young age by the elders, so that they weren't stuffed into a mold or shaped into one type of being. And I was fascinated by that, which is why I wanted to see the Bushmen and why I did a lot of research. So my totem as a mother, I discovered, was the wolf. It really resonated with the wolf and her way of being. And so when I studied the wolf, watched documentaries, read books, it helped me to connect with who I was authentically on the inside. And I became more powerful through the teachings of wolf. And then later on, I started to connect with the owl. And now that I'm 58 years old, I'm entering the elder stage of my life, I am identifying with the owl, which is, it's a feminine symbol, it's nocturnal at night, it resonates with the moon. The moon is transformative. It's never the same shape like the sun. It's mysterious. And I really resonate with the animal of owl, and I've learned all about transformation and the moon and the nighttime and the authentic feminine nature. So animals are my guides, and they speak to me through symbology. What is the animal symbolic of? What is it? If I see an animal, if I have an encounter with an animal, symbolically speaking, what is that animal encounter telling me? The action. Is it flying? Is it walking on the ground? Is it injured? So I'm constantly reading the symbols, particularly through the animals.
Yeah. Now, and I've kind of, you know, looked at and have dabbled a little bit in learning about animal totems. And now, a lot of times animals will have they'll have some symbols attributed to particular animals. Do you feel that, you know, and some people will have attraction to or aversion to specific animals. Is there, do you feel that that attraction, but also that aversion would help us understand ourselves better, you know, when we look at the symbology of both?
I definitely believe that both the attraction and the aversion with animals is a brilliant lesson. So we are a perfectionist society where we want to put up this perfect front and facade that everything's okay, and we're afraid that if we admit we have a flaw, or if we're going to do or enjoy something that doesn't align with our environment, that will be ostracized for it. So we suppress parts of ourselves. Those are our shadows. Or we develop behaviors that we're meant to evolve through. So typically, the animal is your mirror, just like people are, really. But the animal is your mirror. And so if you fear an animal, it is often telling you that you're fearing a part of yourself. And animals don't have to be your totem to inform you. All the animals inform me daily. Just depends on what my lesson is at that point in time. But then there's an animal that definitely resonates with who I am authentically. So every animal, every person has a shadow aspect, a dark and a light side. That's what brings us into balance. And the shadows quite often can be used to our advantage. So let's say you're a lion and you're very fierce and you tear apart your prey. I mean, that can be really protective for you. You're always going to be safe because you're a very fierce predator and you're pretty much safe. But if you over abuse that and you're ripping everybody to shreds, symbolically speaking, you're biting everyone's head off everywhere you go, that could be the shadow aspect of it. So that's one thing we do as a culture, which is why I align and resonate with the moon, is to go deep inside to the dark parts of who we are and let them be free because they might be positive, or turn them around and make them positive. So, yes, there's a shadow aspect in animals, and then there's also the fear aspect as well as all the positive things.
Yeah, you know, because I just, nature is one of my favorite things too, and I just love doing my little nature walks to keep me, grounded in the morning. And I really do pay attention to animals that kind of cross my path, and it's real interesting. Some days, I live in South Carolina, so some days I'll be walking near one of the lakes and I'll see an alligator, up there and just kind of staring at me, or staring at some breakfast, that a bird nearby that he might be looking at, or hawks. I mean, and deer. I've had all kinds of animals cross my, even a caterpillar, that kind of stopped me in my tracks. But I mean, it's one of those things where it seems that, if you kind of pay attention, that no matter where you are, these critters, are going to, if you pay attention, they're going to kind of have a little message for you to maybe, help you through your day or something that you've been troubling with. And at least for me, that's how it's worked.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that because this speaks to the spiritual crisis, because if you can look at an animal and appreciate it and then be curious, like, okay, what is that animal doing? I think it has a message for me. You open the channel to have the dialogue and you'll start getting a lot of insights. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll go home and then do a research on the internet. What's this animal about? What's it like? And when you read, you get hits like, oh, that sounds like me. Oh, that's what I was thinking of when I saw the animal. So you can start, you follow the threads and where you get an emotional hit, like a ping, when you're researching the animal and trying to understand the encounter and what the animal is doing at that time. You start to be able to put it together. And so basically there's an opening now because you're curious and you're doing the research and you're wondering, and you start to get a dialogue with yourself, which is really the animal, mirroring and talking to your soul symbolically. And that helps to solve the spiritual crisis because you're connecting with nature. And what is part of the spiritual crisis is that we're abusing planet Earth and not respecting the animals and the plants. And so this creates a spiritual connection, which makes you want to do better for the planet. It makes you care more for the animals because you're more aware of them and you know about them and their habits. And then you're learning about yourself in the process, which speaks to being the change you want to see. Now, all of a sudden, the animal's informing you and guiding you, and you're your own guidance, and you're not so worried about being angry at something outside of yourself. So it's a brilliant way to find joy, connect with animals, connect with yourself, and help the world while you're at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and also you pay attention to the cycles of the moon. So is that one of those nature's guide that kind of we've kind of gotten away from, being in touch with?
It is one of those guides, the moon, because I believe that we've been overemphasizing our masculine energy. Both women and men have been doing it. It's just what's been happening, what we've been taught to do. Overemphasizing our masculine nature, which is exerting outside of ourselves and manifesting. Again, that's good, but when out of balance, what's happened is we've neglected the authentic feminine nature individually and collectively. And that means we kind of fear or discount anything associated with the feminine nature, mystery, darkness. We just light up the skies because we're so afraid of the dark. And the moon, which is transformative and ever-changing. Remember, we want to be perfect. We want to stay the same. Life's not like that. If you look at nature around you, things are constantly changing. And guess what? The rule of the moon and the rule in nature is something has to die for something new to be born. We learn that from the moon. You can see it with trees that lose their leaves in the winter, and then the leaves come back, and every season dies to a new season. So once you connect to this and the universal rhythms in nature around us, then you vibrate at that rhythm and become the rhythm, and you're constantly able to transform because you allow it and you're open. And that is enlivening because you're moving, and now you're wild, and you're connected to something, and you're moving. You're not stagnant and stiff and dull. So the moon's a teacher of that.
Yeah, you know, and that changing, the embracing the change, you know, that happens. I mean, so many people are fearful of change. You know, I mean, if they had their way, they would always be summer or always be winter. You know, I mean, kind of figuratively speaking, but it's that whole. The cycle of nature is something that it's kind of like going with the flow of a river versus fighting it. You know, it just seems that we would be so much more balanced in the peace if we were to kind of just embrace that rather than fight it.
That's it, exactly. You talked about the flow of the river.
Yeah.
Imagine you're trying to go upstream on a flow of a river. It's exhausting, and that's why we're all so tired. We're working so hard. Just turn the boat around and follow the stream. See where it takes you.
Yep. Exactly. Have a fun ride, for sure.
Yeah.
So now, one of the things that seems to be a big challenge in today's environment is stress, and that it's, I mean, everyone just feels much more and more stressed. I mean, just life in general, and at the pace and acceleration that we're experiencing things. How does the experience of stress, how can that be maybe transformed or transmuted, you know, into some, maybe an expression of that wildness, if that's a possible transition?
How to transform stress into wildness and how get some relief. It's so important. We know stress is probably the number one cause of disease. And when I'm stressed and I really go inward and track myself, I realize that it's self-imposed. I'm worried about what other people think. I'm worried that someone won't like me. I'm worried that I'm going to be a failure as a mother or that I'm going to let someone down. I'm worried that I won't be lovable because I don't have enough money to live in a big house. Whatever it is, the stress for me is usually self-imposed. And even if it's something that seems external, like, well, my husband really bothers me, or if my child would only do this, we give away so much of our power. And the best thing, the thing that helped me the most is just to go inside and figure out what I really want. What do I really want and what is really important that has nothing to do with pleasing other people and fearing that I won't fit in? And when I connect with who I am authentically on the inside and I can let go of all the appearances and the fears and the shoulds, then I automatically find relief and I'm calm. And the more that I can get in touch with this feeling of what I want, just the feeling of what it feels like to have relief and peace, the more I can create that in my body, and that's the antidote to stress. And there's a lot of techniques for getting there, journaling, being in nature, a lot of the things we've talked about today, but really getting more in touch with our body, feeling how the stress is detrimental and upsetting, and then finding those feelings, those places where we feel the relief and getting more of that. And it's being a master of your thoughts and emotions, figuring out how to take your mind and your body to that place.
Okay.
A lot of people do meditation.
Yeah, that would definitely work. Now, in your book, you indicate that you'd always dreamed about being an elder. I can honestly say that never crossed my path and my thoughts. So tell us about that. I mean, because it's just such a unique, I guess, outside of, you know, maybe some of the Native American or any society who, you know, respects and cherishes elders. You know, I don't think we really have that much in the USA. I mean, you know, I mean, some cultures it is. So for you, though, how did that show up for you, you know, the idea of being an elder?
From a very young age, I was always attracted to older people and loved older people and didn't do as well with my peers. So I always had this knowing that elders were really important. And yet, at the same time, I didn't have that many elder guides, and I wished that I did. It's been a long, lonely journey. And so there was something inside of me that knew. I just knew that I was going to be that elder that I never had growing up, someone that understood me, had gave me unconditional love, accepted me for who I was, but most of all saw who I was on the inside, because I never felt valued growing up for who I was on the inside. It was all, well, if you do this or you get straight A's or you look pretty or you're skinny, you know, we'll love you, and oh, you'll get the man, and oh, you'll get the job. And so there was a disconnect for me because it didn't happen. It didn't make me happy to achieve all these things. But also, I knew there was more to me than meets the eye, and it really was a huge, painful wound for me not to be seen for who I was on the inside. So I studied the meaning of life, and I really dove deep into life stages, what it means to be a child, what it means to be in your 20s, what it means to be in your 30s, what it means to be a mom, what it means to be an elder, what it means to die. And then I took all this wisdom and I applied it to myself, and I tracked myself the entire time. I tracked what I was doing, who I was talking to, compared to how I felt about it in the inside. And whenever I felt good about it, I stayed there for a while until it took its course and it was time for something new, and then I would figure out how to change and move into that and do more research. And I was like my own guinea pig about the meaning of life and what is happiness. And I know now it's very complex because we're different. Each one of us has an individual soul path and an individual self, and we're brought up in different families and different cultures, and we have different destinies, and we're different ages, and we're different sexes. So I have this matrix mind now from making this my life mission of how it works, all leading up to this idea that I want to be the elder with wisdom that understands the meaning of life as it applies to everybody with a unique path, that I'm not going to judge it, but I'm going to meet you where you're at, and I'm going to help you and guide you and help you figure out what the lighted path is to move you through life and change. And it's going to take elders that feel this good about their wisdom and wanting to share it with the world that's going to help solve our spiritual crisis and give the youth a foundation and a platform for them, with all of the energy and vision and dreams, to make change and to guide them through life. And so it's all been building for me. I just was relentless, knowing I think elders are really awesome. I don't want to always be young. I want to change. I want to be wise and respected. And I want other people to feel comfortable doing that too. I don't want elders to feel discarded as if they're not useful.
Yeah.
So again, I want to demonstrate another way of being.
Wonderful. That is so important. Now, I understand that you work as an inner wilderness guide. So can you tell us, I'm sure this is some of the work that you do that people can find on your website, but tell us a little bit about that.
The other thing I learned on my journey was that we all have wounds and trauma, And I went through stages where I was angry and I blamed, and that was valid. But you have to move through the anger and the blame and realize that it's all intended, and what did you learn from it? So I've been an inner tracker my entire life, tracking what I was doing on the inside, this invisible essence coming into my authentic self, wanting to share this wisdom with the world. Our inner self is wild. It's the soul. It wants to move. It's authentic. I believe that when we have wounds, when we're younger, that it's meant to be turned around into a gift at a later stage in life, because we immersed in the wound, we felt it, we know how it feels, and if we can move through it, then we're there to help other people who have the same wound move through it based on our personal experience. So that's what I'm doing as an inner wildness guide. My wound was not being seen for who I was on the inside. Now my gift is, because I know it so well, is helping people connect with who they are on the inside, because I am the owl. I can see in the dark. I see where they're blocked, and I've been there. I understand it. My story is their story, and I can help them move through it. So that's what an inner wildness guide is, and that's how I help people.
That's great. That's great. And your transition from Silicon Valley socialite to bone woman and, you know, wilderness guide, I mean, to me, you know, the idea that you've actually done it, experienced it, you know, it gives credence and support that, you know, other women who want to make that shift, you know, to get more in touch with their inner wilderness, you know, you're speaking from experience, so that's wonderful. So we're almost down to the end, Lucinda. So is there any topic that maybe we haven't covered, or any maybe words of advice that you would like to give listeners, or anything that you would hope that the reader will take away from reading Confessions of a Bone Woman?
Thank you. Well, if I could do one giveaway for people, I would just ask you to be compassionate and loving of yourself and go inward and figure out how to feel enlivened by connecting with who you were as a child, and express that energy from the inside out, and find a guide, find someone who will listen to you without judgment and won't use it against you for gossip, and will guide you to fulfillment, because we all have this gift inside of us and we all have this potential.
Absolutely. Well, Lucinda, thank you very much for your time today. I knew this was going to be a fun, interesting interview, and it was. And I really appreciate you sharing your experience with us. This has really been fun.
Well, thank you, Robert. Yes, I agree. It was so much fun. I'm really grateful for this opportunity.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Lucinda Bakken-White, and we've been talking about her book, Confessions of a Bone Woman: Realizing Authentic Wilderness in a Civilized World. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is authenticwilderness.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website there. And do go and explore her website. She's got some very interesting information. And I'm sure that you'll be enlightened by reading it. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.